I'd like to welcome everybody here to the April 24th, 2025 meeting of the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings will please sign in. Witnesses will be sworn in prior to giving testimony. All proceedings of the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are recorded. Decisions of this board are final. Challenges to the decisions of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. If you will, please silence all your cell phones and noise-making devices. And if you will, join me for the prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. Father, we just thank you for the privilege of living here in this city. We thank you for a beautiful day to come together to do the business of this city. I ask your blessings on these proceedings. Give us wisdom. Help us to make right decisions. Lord, bless the people here and the people of Savannah and Chatham County. In Jesus' name, amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, if you're planning on speaking today or giving testimony, if you will, please stand, raise your right hand, repeat after me, please. I do solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Okay, we have two items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. The first one is 0 Dixon Street and 0 Dillon Avenue, 25-001731 and 101 and 1015 Whitaker Street and 120 and 124 Park Avenue. Let's see, they don't, oh, here it is. 25-001730. Is there a motion to remove these from the final agenda?
So moved.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to remove them. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right, motion passes and these items will be removed. The approval of the minutes from the March 27th meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
A motion by Mr. Plunk to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes and the minutes are approved. Is there a motion to approve the regular agenda as you see it before you?
So moved.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve the final agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes and the agenda is approved. First, we're going to hear 412 East 46th Street, variances for rear and side yard setbacks and a minimum lot area for ADU, 25-000635.
This is Sadia Sorrent with Development Services here to talk about 412 East 46th Street. So the petitioner is requesting three variances in association with the conversion of an existing non-conforming accessory structure into an ADU in the RSF 6 zoning district. One, to reduce the minimum lot area required to establish an ADU from 7,500 square feet to 4,725 square feet. To reduce the eastern side yard interior setback of an ADU from 5 feet to 6 inches. And to reduce the rear yard setback of an ADU from 3 feet to 2 feet and 5 inches. Here is the aerial and site map of the property. So the parcel is located in the Ardsley Park / Chatham Crescent neighborhood and conservation district. This application is associated with a request for a COA. It was on the agenda for the HPC meeting yesterday and the COA was approved. There is historic staff here to talk about it as well if you have any further questions. The subject property measures approximately 4,725 square feet with 45 feet of width by 105 feet of depth. It is zoned RSF6 and it is non-conforming parcel in the zoning district due to the lot width and area. Additionally, the parcel does have lane access. The principal dwelling on the lot was built in 1929 and it has a building footprint of 952 square feet. There is also an existing accessory structure on the lot that was built in about 1985. It measures 180 square feet, 10 feet by 18 feet currently. In its current state, it is nonconforming with encroaching rear and eastern side yard setbacks. The petitioner is proposing to convert the existing accessory structure and ADU. The structure will be partially demolished and then expanded to the west. The proposed ADU conversion will add 124 square feet to the total footprint, and it will result in the total lot coverage of 26.24%. So section 8.7.4.B of the zoning ordinance requires the lot to be 125% of the minimum lot area required to establish an ADU in the zoning district that is 7,500 square feet, and the petitioner is requesting to reduce this to 4,725 square feet. Additionally, section 8.7.4.A.3 of the zoning ordinance requires side yard setbacks of 5 feet, and rear yard setbacks of 3 feet, for ADUs on a parcel with lane access. So the requested ordinance for a lot area is generally consistent with the zoning ordinance because it is standard that can be varied by the ZBA where they deem appropriate. However, the requested variances for the setbacks are not consistent. Additionally, for special conditions, the accessory structure was constructed before the adoption of current development standards, and the lot is smaller than is expected by the zoning district, and the request is the result of the petitioner's chosen design. It could be financially motivated. However, the variances are not required to make use of the subject property, and approval of the variances would confer special privilege upon the petitioner, though, as frequently is the case, variance relief is a remedy afforded to all similarly situated property owners. So here is modeling of the ADU. I just have some red arrows here to point out where it is from like the different angles of what it will look like in comparison to the primary dwelling. And also just some photos that we took at a site visit of the accessory structure currently. And this is from the parcel. So with all of that, MPC staff recommends approval of the following variance in association with the conversion of an existing nonconforming accessory structure into an ADU in the RSF6 zoning district, to reduce the minimum lot area required to establish an ADU from 7,500 square feet to 4,725 square feet, and then denial of the following two variances, to reduce the eastern side yard interior setback of an ADU from 5 feet to 6 inches, and also to reduce the rear yard setback of an ADU from 3 feet to 2 feet and 5 inches.
Sadie, can you go back to the pictures, the actual photographs? Which way is west in relation to this picture? Towards the backyard?
This side is west, yeah.
Okay. So
it's right here.
They propose to leave the rear where it sits right now and the eastern side where it sits right now.
To my understanding, yes. But the petitioner
expand the other way. So it won't change from what it's been since 82.
Correct. For those side setbacks, yeah.
Are there any other questions for staff? All right, thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward? State your name for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Eli Lurie. And to clarify, we are keeping that northeast corner. So the setbacks are in that northeast corner, and we want to do a partial demolition of this building. So we're trying to maintain those two walls on the north and the east. So those are the two setbacks that we're going for today. None of what we are... So if you can see my mouse, we're maintaining this semi-historic corner. There was some back and forth about whether this building was historic and what parts and pieces of it were, but we felt that there was enough of it to keep that northeast corner. So it's 2'6" here and then 6 inches there. And we're maintaining that wall on both of those and just extending them to the west. So the building just becoming wider to the west only. It's not becoming any deeper. It's just becoming taller and moving to the west.
What are you demolishing on it?
We're demolishing the roof structure. Here, I'm trying to see if I can find any of the good photos. We're removing this western wall and parts of the southern wall on that carriage house. The roof structure on this entire structure is pretty much gone, and it's sagging really badly. So we're removing that roof structure and removing those two walls because the building's getting wider. And the southern wall is basically all a garage door at this point, so there's not really much wall on there anyway. We also have a letter that was sent, I believe last night, from the owner to the east, saying that they're fully in support of this carriage house as well. Do y'all have any questions for me on this?
Any questions for the petitioner? I don't think so, Mr. Lurie.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to enter into public comment. Fred Wilbur, are you here?
Yes, I'm Fred Wilbur. I live directly to the west of this property, and I support what they'd like to do.
Thank you, Mr. Wilbur. Mr. Tom Ramey?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to thank the commission for what you do to protect our properties and the staff for their good work. I am the neighbor directly to the east of the petitioner. There's a very good photograph here I want to go to. Well, ma'am, could you help me find the photograph of the houses from the street?
Was it the one from
the one that was looking down the driveway? Sorry. Yes, that one. So I'm the house on the right side here, the Craftsman House. Mr. Moore is removing and replacing most of the small roof structure you see there. Behind that, you'll see the two-story carriage house of our backdoor neighbor on the other side of the lane. So if Mr. Moore is allowed to do what he's done, he merely increases the size of his outbuildings to the size of his contiguous neighbors. I'm fully in support of that. The setbacks in the style that he would propose are consistent with the neighborhood. It's common to have two-story carriage houses abutting the lane, abutting each other's property. Of the total 12 lots on 45th Street Lane, five of them currently have two-story carriage house structures. So Mr. Moore's would be the sixth. I'm fully in support of that effort. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Any other members of the public wish to speak? If you're online, use the raise your hand feature.
No, sir.
All right, well, then we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Ball, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
Were there any other letters of support or opposition at all from the community, the neighbors, or anything that we got?
We do not, no.
Mr. Griffith?
No.
Would someone care to make a motion?
I motion that we approve the requested variance.
All right, Mr. Turner has made a motion to approve the variance as requested. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Griffith. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right, motion passes and the variance is approved as requested. Next, we're going to hear 1829 Lloyd Street. This is a variance for front yard setback 25-001723.
This is City Ashley Renegan here to talk about 1829 Lloyd Street. The petitioner is requesting a variance to reduce the front yard setback from 20 feet to 7 feet to reestablish an attached carport in the RSF 6 zoning district. Here is the aerial and site map. The property is located in the Liberty City, Summerside, Southover, and Richfield neighborhood. The subject property measures to be about 6,000 square feet in the RSF 6 zoning district, and it is conforming parcel with 60 feet of frontage and 100 feet of depth. The principal dwelling was built in about 1965 and is conforming with a building footprint of 1,198 square feet. Additionally, there was an attached carport that was destroyed in a snowstorm this year. When it was built, it measured to be about 242 square feet, 11 feet by 22 feet. MPC staff was not able to determine the year the carport was built. The petitioner is requesting to rebuild the carport, which would encroach into the front yard setback by 13 feet. Section 5.7.5 of the zoning ordinance does require front yard setbacks of 20 feet, and they are requesting a 7-foot front yard setback. Additionally, per information received from the petitioner, a member of the household is disabled. The variance for the request or variance for the carport is being requested to help facilitate a safe entrance into the house. Moving on, the proposal is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, the carport was originally built before the adoption of current development standards. And that is the same for the special condition. And additionally, the request is the result of the petitioner's chosen design and of the original carport being destroyed by a snowstorm. The variance is likely not financially motivated, and the variance is also not required to make use of the subject property. Here is the carport plan. So here's the primary dwelling, and then here would be the placement of it. And then also moving down here, I was able to pull this photo from the tax assessor, which shows the carport prior to the snowstorm in, it says 2023. And then here is a photo of it recently of where they would be rebuilding it. So with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the requested variance to reduce the front yard setback from 20 feet to 7 feet to reestablish an attached carport in the RSF6 zoning district.
Thank you, Sadie. Any questions for staff? Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good morning. I'm Louis Manigault.
Hello, Mr. Manigault.
Good morning.
You have anything you'd like to say?
No, it's just that I would like to rebuild that carport. The first one was built by vinyl siding, and the weather, it just couldn't take the weather, and now I'm just building one that's going to be sturdy.
Going to be in the same place as the other one?
Same place,
same
yes.
Thing.
Yes.
Is there any questions for the petitioner? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that wish to speak concerning this petition? Is there any online?
No, sir.
Okay. Mr. Griffith, do you have anything you'd like to say? Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Plump?
Sir.
Mr. Ball?
Nope.
Someone like to make a motion?
Motion that we approve the petitioner's request for a variance.
All right. Mr. Plump has made a motion to approve the petitioner's request. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Any discussion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plump?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes and the request for variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear 1012 Atlantic Avenue, variance to front yard setback, lot coverage, and relief from nonconformity, 25-001658.
This is Sadie Eschleren again for 1012 Atlantic Avenue. The petitioner is requesting a variance for relief from nonconformity in association with a second-story addition to a primary dwelling on an existing nonconforming lot in the TR3 zoning district. Here is the aerial and site map. You can see the placement of the parcel right here. It is located in the Eastside neighborhood, and it measures to be approximately 1,085 square feet, with 35 feet of width and 31 feet of depth. It is a non-conforming parcel in the TR3 zoning district in regards to its lot area. Additionally, the parcel does have lane access. So the single-story principal dwelling was built in 1930 and is non-conforming in its current state due to many regards. By the permitted lot coverage by 14.33%, it encroaches into the front yard setback by 1 foot and 8 inches, the rear yard setback by 20 feet, the western side yard setback by 1 foot and 8 inches, and the eastern side yard setback by 1 foot and 4 inches. Its current building footprint is about 648 square feet. The petitioner is requesting to add a second story to the dwelling. The lot coverage and setbacks will remain the same. So section 11.4.2.B.2 of the zoning ordinance discusses that nonconforming structures may be enlarged. The petitioner is requesting relief from nonconformity to expand or enlarge the nonconforming structure for the second floor addition. Additionally, a ZBA application was submitted for similar variance requests in 2023 under a different petitioner. The application was scheduled to be heard in March 2023, but it was not heard by the board. It did not make it onto any agendas. Additionally, due to the significant scale of the improvements on the structure, the petitioner is expected to meet all current development standards or seek variance relief. Though not listed, relief for one relief required off-street parking space is required. In general, the proposal is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, the home was built long prior to adoption of current development standards. And in terms of special conditions, it's similar. Both the subdivision and existing dwelling predate adoption of the current development standards, and the parcel and configuration are non-conforming in regards to the TR3 zoning district. However, the ordinance does promote legal development on non-conforming parcels zoned for residential use. The requested variance is possibly financially motivated, and the lot and structure have existed in this condition for a long period of time, so it is not a result of the action of the petitioner. Additionally, a denial of this relief from nonconformity could have consequences of prohibiting the improvement of a substandard dwelling, and these are the minimum that are necessary to make reasonable improvements to the structure without demolishing or rebuilding it, and it is unlikely to convey special privilege as well. Here's a snippet from the tax assessor just to show the building footprint of the structure. And then here is also the drawing of the proposed addition and what that will look like. You can't see it from this view, but it's just a second story addition with some stairs on the first floor. And then additionally, here are a couple of photos of the structure in its current state that were taken on a site visit. So with that said, MPC staff recommends approval of the requested variance for relief from nonconformity in association with a second-story addition to a primary dwelling on an existing nonconforming lot in the TR3 zoning district. Additionally, though not requested initially, MPC staff recommends approval of the variance for relief from the requirement of one off-street parking space.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? All right, thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Andre Gadsden. With this particular property here, it doesn't matter what we do, it's not going to conform based on the lot situation. So we're just trying to bring this property up to a current standing and make it actually livable.
Any questions for petitioner? All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thanks.
Any members of the public wish to speak? Nobody online?
No, sir.
Mr. Ball, do you like to say anything?
I mean, existing lot of record, seems like there were no house there. We'd still like to see some variances granted and something built there. So this is what he wants to do. I don't see a problem with it.
Mr. Plum?
Nothing to add.
Mr. Turner?
Nothing to add.
Mr. Griffith?
No, I think staff did a good job on this one there.
Amen. Would somebody care to make a motion?
I move to approve staff recommendation.
All right. Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve the variance as staff has recommended. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Ball. Any discussion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes and the variances are approved. Next, we're going to hear 1214 Siler Avenue, variance to side yard setbacks for accessory structure. 25-001107.
Sadie Ashler again for 1214 Siler Avenue. The petitioner is requesting two after-the-fact variances in association with two existing accessory structures in the TR3 zoning district. One, to reduce the eastern side yard interior setback of an accessory structure from 5 feet to 2 feet, and two, to reduce the western side yard interior setback of an accessory structure from 5 feet to 1 foot. Here is the placement of the property. It's located in the Live Oak neighborhood. The subject property measures approximately 4,000 square feet in area, and it is a conforming parcel in the zoning district with 50 feet of width and 80 feet of depth, and the parcel does have lane access. The primary dwelling was built in about 1938 and is conforming with a building footprint of 1,072 square feet. The property also has two accessory structures. On the western side of the parcel is an attached carport that measures approximately 140 square feet, 10 feet by 14 feet. The carport is encroaching into the side setback by 4 feet. Additionally, on the eastern side of the parcel is a shed that measures approximately 72 square feet. According to the petitioner, it encroaches into the side setback by 3 feet. Staff were unable to locate any records on when the structures were built. And additionally, please note that 120 square feet is the threshold to pull a building permit for a structure. Additionally, staff estimates that the roof overhangs of the accessory structures may potentially encroach further into the setbacks than what is requested. So the zoning ordinance section 8.7.3.C.I requires side yard setbacks of a minimum of 5 feet. They're requesting to reduce that to 1 foot for the western side and 2 feet for the eastern side. So the variance requests are not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. Staff is not able to determine if the petitioner acquired the parcel with the accessory structures already on the property or if they were built after. However, this is not necessarily a hardship. The requested variances are likely not financially motivated, and they are not required to make use of the septic property. Oops. Additionally, approval of the variance would confer special privilege, though it is a remedy afforded to all similarly situated property owners. Oh, no. Okay. So here is a photo of the carport. A little dark to see, but it goes right here. And then here is a photo of the shed on the other side as well. So with that said, MPC staff recommends denial of the requested 2 after-the-fact variances in association with 2 existing accessory structures in the TR3 zoning district to reduce the eastern side yard interior setback of an accessory structure from 5 feet to 2 feet and to reduce the western side yard interior setback of an accessory structure from 5 feet to 1 foot.
And scroll back up a little bit. So this, the western side is right there next to that tree.
This is the eastern side. So this is 2 feet they're requesting right here. And then on this side, they're requesting 1 foot.
Okay, right next to the other property.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions for staff?
So we have no idea. Staff has no idea from records when the structures were built, if they were built by this property owner. Obviously, we can ask him next.
Correct. But, yeah, that information was not in the tax assessor.
Okay.
There's nothing on the Sanborn maps where they show?
Not that we saw.
Okay. All right. Would the petitioner please come forward?
How's everybody doing?
Good, good. Please state your name for the record.
Daniel Chiavacci.
Good morning. Would you like to say anything?
Yeah, I'm in over my head on this. I'm a little new to it. But as far as the pre-meeting with the MPC, I called them before I filed the paperwork, but they didn't – it was a miscommunication about having a pre-meeting. So that's one of the reasons they might have requested denial on this. We did put the structures up. We moved into the house about 4 years ago. And, I mean, we drove around and we were new to the neighborhood. So we drove around the neighborhood looking at all what we didn't know what we wanted to do because it's a small house on a small lot, with no accessory structures, no basement, no anything. We wanted to get something to put our lawnmower and our bikes in. We wanted something to put over the driveway to protect the motorcycles. So we drove around the neighborhood and I have some pictures in that I think I left up there with my application that showed the things we were looking at. So we didn't even think, and ignorance is no excuse, but we didn't even think about codes and anything like that when we did that. When we did put the shed, when we decided we were going to get a shed, we just wanted a small shed. It's 72 square feet. It's a lean-to shed. It's 8 feet on the top, 6 feet on the bottom. We just kind of wanted to tuck it in. And we talked to our neighbors next to us, and they were putting up a fence. We discussed it. We worked, you know, talked about it, and no one had a problem. So I didn't even think it would be an issue. And she actually emailed something to the commission here saying she doesn't have a problem with it even to this day and that we had actually worked and talked about it. So, since we put that shed in, we planted a peach tree. We have a raised garden bed. We have an orange tree and everything in the backyard. So to drag that, if denied and I need to move it, we'd have to drag it through to the backyard, cut trees down. And then with the setbacks that they are with my small backyard, it would still end up almost in the middle of the backyard. So if it's denied, we might have to take it down or figure out something else to do. As far as the awning goes, the driveway, the house has been there for 100 years. The driveway has been there for at least 30. It's unfortunately, it's a foot and a half away from the property line. So we didn't extend it out. We just wanted something to cover our bikes because with the Savannah weather, the sun's baking on them all day. Downpours are pouring on them. So they're starting to rust and get a little nasty. And so I just bought a $500 awning off of Amazon. I didn't even think it would be an issue to put it up. So I put it up. We didn't extend it out. We just put it on right to the edge of the driveway. So I didn't really think that was encroaching. Again, ignorance is no excuse. So
I mean, that's it. I mean, if it's not granted, I mean, it's easy enough to take down, and motorcycles will just sit out there. But then I wouldn't be able to, I mean, I'd like to protect them, but with the driveway so close to the property line, there would really be nothing else. I couldn't put anything over there because it would be 7 feet off the house and wouldn't even fit a motorcycle under it. So I'm asking to please allow that to happen. And there are some other issues on the property line with the awning that I want to discuss, because the reason I'm here is because the builder next door is building a house and he's the one that called and complained about the awning. He doesn't live on the street, and as far as I know, he's a licensed builder, and he built a big four bedroom house on a small lot right next to us. I don't know if we have any right here. He had a big house on a small lot. And so what he did was the shed you see here, the fence that he built was 6 feet. I think you should have some pictures in my application. I'm not sure if you'd have that. But he built the fence six. Okay, thank you.
I want to just caution you. If this testimony that you're getting into now has to do with your petition, then let's hear it. But if it's a separate issue.
Well, he's complaining about the property line when he built a fence on our side of the property line. He has a shed that he finally cut down. It's just part of the issue of the property line. And he's here to speak today to deny. So I just wanted to show it. But if you look in here, Here's what it looked like before. He had his fence 6 inches on our property line. He had the shed right on the property line. And so when I started questioning, because I'm like, what's going on here? He had to cut the shed back to fit his fence on his property. So then when he did that, he got upset, and that's why he called on us.
Understanding. So, you'll get a chance to rebut any public comment.
What's that?
After public comment, you'll get a chance to speak again.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just don't know that. All right. Well, I guess if that's the case, then I'll just shut up.
Okay. Is there any questions for the petitioner? Anybody? All right.
I mean, in conclusion, we bought a small property and we're trying to do the best we can to protect our property. And I appreciate you guys at least giving me the chance to come here and advocate for that.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Alfonso Irving.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Alfonso Irving, and I'm the builder of the adjacent property. And as you can see right here down the middle, originally when the house was built, this is my grass. This is my neighbor's at 1214. Originally, it was a fence that went down the middle. And I don't know his name, Mr. Dan. When I built this fence, I originally took down the fence down the middle. So when I built my fence, I pretty much knew where the fence line was at, and I had a survey. So Mr. Dan said I was encroaching on his property line. The house is for sale. He put several signs on his awning, making the potential buyers aware that I was encroaching on his property. So to appease Mr. Dan, I moved the fence in 12 inches. I don't know if y'all had the pictures.
Did you want to show those photos to the board?
Yes.
You can bring them up there.
Okay.
So you can keep talking.
Okay. So So I wasn't absolutely certain about the property line, you know. So where the property line goes down the middle, I had a survey done. The property pins, the 5/8 original property pins was on the corner. They put one on the front. So I resurveyed the line, and right where it's breaking at, that's the original property line. So I was out, my corner post was probably encroaching on his property 4 inches because his original wood fence was set in about a foot. So I was encroaching about 4 inches on his property because, you know, it's a dead space in there. So I had my guys come back out. We took the privacy fence down and we moved it in to appease Mr. Dan, the 4 inches. It was 4 inches out. Originally, the shed here, it was on, you know, it was 2.5 feet over. So the city pretty much told me they gave me an ultimatum to try to take it down. So off of his fence, being that it's over, I'm actually 4'8" off his fence. But the problem is, we'll be breaking out on the property line. I did move it. So as of now, I'm actually 3 foot off the property line. My wall from my property line is 3 foot. And my wall to his fence is actually 4'8". You know, but he's been adamant about property lines. So I did move my fence and I did adjust my shed 2.5 feet, which, and I'm still 3 foot, and Mr. Dash still is opposing the 3 feet. So I got a zoning told me that I'm gonna have to either put in for a variance or tear the shed down. Initially, I was gonna tear the shed down, even though I cut it back, but the realtor suggested that I put in for the variance, and I'm gonna put in for the variance because now after I done cut it back, I'm actually 4'8" off his fence and I'm 3 foot off the property line. Now the problem is, I'm selling this house. The water is coming off of his roof to the shed onto the property, and it's causing a problem with potential buyers. The potential buyers probably wouldn't even notice it, but Mr. Dad put no trespassing signs. He got signs on his awning talking about the property line. I got pictures of it. You know, and a whole bunch of stuff he just hangs on his awning. So now when my potential buyers come to look at the house, it's raising major concerns. Not so much with me, because I could care less. I could take the structure down. It don't bother me. I'm here to sell a house. But the concerns is, and like I said, he brought the attention because he got all these little cautionary Google, you know, stuff hanging on the awning, and now it's gonna raise concerns with the buyers, you know. So I took a screen and I put it at the property pin in the rear. I tapped a nail in the front to where the property pin is in the concrete, and I literally ran a screen down the middle to show the potential buyers that I'm in compliance. We don't have a property line issue no more, and I paid additional money for that. But like I said, you know, the issue that we have now is his water coming off his roof to the awning, to the concrete driveway. You know, and like I said, even though I'm 3 foot off of the property line now, and I cut the shed back, and I'm 4'8" off his property line, he's still in opposition. And he got every right to raise that concern. And like I said, I don't have a problem with it. My only concern is his water. And I'm like, well, if you're so adamant about property lines, then you should respect that your water is dumping onto mine. Because like I say, when I had a fence issue, I moved the fence 4 inches. When he had a shed issue and said it was too close, I cut 2.5 foot off. And like I say, I don't have no problem taking the whole shed down. My only concern today is, and we didn't even have to come here because I made him aware of it since we was talking through signs. I also posted a sign out there, you know, saying, you know, you posted signs out there for me, and I took the corrective measures out of respectability and corrected it. I let him know, well, Mr. Dan, your water is dumping onto my property and you need to set your awning back. He didn't do it. So, you know, and that's when I call, you know, code enforcement, because respect is mutual. So if you're that adamant and that relentless about property lines, you should be respectful enough to move your awning. And I conclude.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wish to speak? None. Would you like to rebut public comment?
I'm not going to deny it. I did hang some signs out on that awning warning prospective buyers that there's a property line issue, because I didn't want him selling the house and saddling the new buyers with the property line problem. That's the first thing. And the second reason I hung him out there is because I can't communicate with Mr. Irving because he's been threatening. He's destroyed our property. He's lit fires on the on his driveway 5 feet from my car. I've had the cops over there 3 times, and now I currently have a good behavior bond against him because he's been threatening us and doing everything else around him. So we went to court and had to apply for that, and so now we have a good behavior. That's why I'm just trying to protect the new people coming in. It's not just our side of the line. The lady on the other side of this lot, he ripped her fence out, and he wouldn't put it back until he said soon. So I'm just trying to protect someone who moves into that house from having any problems when they're the new homeowners. As far as what he's saying about the water coming off the driveway, his driveway is – my driveway's been there 30-something years. It's a foot from the property line. His driveway's brand new. It was moved from one side of the lot to our side of the lot. When he was going to pour the driveway, he had the form right on the property line, right on that green grass. So I called the traffic engineering. They came out and they made him move it over 16 inches to put his driveway down. There's a huge house there with a big roof with a lot of water coming off that. And from what I gather now, there's a 3-foot setback for driveways from a side property line. There's a 3-foot setback for a lot his size with the free street frontage. So I called the traffic engineering department. They said, the code is actually 1 to 3 feet, not 3 feet, and that they make exceptions for small lots. So if he's worried about water, I'm also worried about water because he has a huge driveway 20 inches closer to the property line than it should be, and all I have is a little on him. So I hate to drag you guys into the middle of this. I've been dealing with it for 2 years. We've had nails in our tires that we've had to replace. We've had trash on our land. He's been blocking our driveways. I really didn't want to get into this because it's – more of a civil matter than I guess this is, but I don't know what else to say. I just appreciate it if you'd consider allow us to keep our shed. I mean, the shed's on the other side of the house. He's complaining about that. It's not even his property line. He doesn't even live on the street. So thank you for hearing me out.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to enter into board discussion, and I'll start us off by saying this is another classic example of why zoning laws exist. And it seems like one of those cases, if everybody's in question is made to follow what the law says, that's the end of the discussion. Mr. Griffith, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I think I'm good with the eastern side setback. The western side, I mean, nobody could live with that awning. I mean, especially what Mr. Alfonso did to make his firm.
Mr. Blunt?
Yeah, I mean, it's just unfortunate anytime you get into these kind of disputes between property owners that maybe could have been resolved amicably, but we're way past that. And kind of when you get to this point, you don't have a lot of options as a board except to just kind of apply the letter of the law because you don't want to get in the middle. And, you know, we're coming in, it sounds like, 2 years into this dispute, and, you know, we don't want to play sides. You know, especially like you said, on the side that borders his property, is just kind of just got to enforce the law at that point. It is my opinion.
Mr. Turner.
Yeah, I agree with Mr. Plunk. It seems to be a bit of animosity. And so, the only thing that we can do is just cut through that and go with staff, recommendation.
Mr. Ball.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, it does look like the fence is now on the property line where it belongs. And it seems like that awning, maybe not that awning, but an awning could be modified to fit within the law and still performance function without getting water on the neighbor's lot, that kind of stuff.
Hey, would someone like to make a motion?
I'd make a motion that we accept the petitioner's request for the eastern yard setback and deny the petition for the western setback.
Is there a second to that?
What side of the street is this on? The awning is on the west side? Okay, I guess I'm looking at this backwards then.
Yeah, sorry. I have a second. Okay, tell me I'm wrong. No, I think
you're right. Yeah, you're correct. The western side is the carport slash awning.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Mr. Griffith has made a motion to deny the eastern or to accept the eastern yard setback and to deny the western yard setback. Mr. Turner has seconded the motion. Is there any discussion? All right. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Blunt?
No.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right, motion passes and the eastern yard setback is approved and the western yard setback is denied. Next, we're going to hear 1314 East 38th Street, relief from ADU lot and building size 25-001676.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Zoning Board of Appeals. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here. A little bit of context might be helpful going into looking at this particular request. You'll recall for probably about a year or so, we have been working toward relaxation of some standards so that we can get some additional housing units built. And I'll say that the text amendments and the affordable housing overlay that's going to go before council today is one product of those efforts. Another one that I will say merits acknowledgement is the effort toward understanding how we can incorporate cottage courts in particular. And so I'd like to acknowledge we've been working with Lori DeVector on this particular piece of property, and also you'll probably recognize Ms. Paxton's name. She's also been a strong advocate. And so the thing that we're attempting to overcome here in looking at that was this relationship between the principal dwelling and accessory dwellings. As you're aware, people will regularly come in to request ADUs that are greater than 40% of the floor area. And so I think in understanding that this is an attempt to create several small dwellings that are all more or less 100% of one another in sort of a context where they might share an amenity at the core that might be a garden. It might be a small yard space, but it allows people to kind of live in a communal environment. But also it's a smaller, more affordable dwelling. That is kind of a little bit of sort of the background as to how we got to where we are. So with that, this is essentially, first it came through as a conforming subdivision. As you can see, it meets the frontage requirement and the area requirement in order to be subdivided. So it did produce a shape of parcel that is unanticipated, but it did meet the standards of the zoning text. And so that's how it got approved. And so this is now coming forward where Ms. Paxton and Ms. DeVector are attempting to still create kind of that cottage court feel. I'll say that at least at the time of our discussions, I want to say this was the entirety of the parcel. This one was subdivided at some earlier point. This structure was pre-existing, but I believe this structure right here was also built by Ms. DeVector or her associates, and so it was this entire concept here. And so it's kind of the size and configuration that we're dealing with on this parcel that would leave this, as I'm guessing, a central amenity area. Again, this has been about a year-long conversation, if that's helpful. And so the two requests that are associated with this proposal, first to reduce the minimum lot size requirement to establish an ADU from 125% to 116%, and also to permit the building footprint for the ADU to exceed the 40% standard in relation to the principal dwelling to go up about 10%. So, again, this came through recently as a subdivision. You can see that this was approved. This is that petition reference number if you're interested. The lot currently has a concrete foundation that is proposed to be removed. And petitioner is proposing to build a two-story principal dwelling with a footprint of 428 square feet and an accessory dwelling unit that is also two stories with a footprint of just 216 square feet. The lot size is not large enough to establish an ADU, and that is the basis of that request. Also, the zoning ordinance requires a lot size, reduction of 9% of the standard. I apologize. To jump down to the building size, again, you can see here that it is permitted only to be up to 40% of the principal floor area of, the floor area of the principal structure, and they are requesting to exceed that by about 10%. The structures will remain, the structures and the lot coverage and their setbacks will all be consistent with the requirements of the zoning district. And there will also be two parking spaces that are provided. So again, in looking at this in the context of a hardship, I offered that so that you would understand this does not unfortunately meet hardship criteria, but it is more or less consistent with the initiatives that we have been seeing around trying to create more affordable housing. The staff has consistently supported requests to grant relief from the minimum 125% standard, but again, the cottage court concept is inconsistent with the intent of the principal and accessory relationship between structures on the parcel. There are no special circumstances related to this. This is the result of the petitioner's chosen design. Admittedly, other conforming configurations are possible. The variance request is potentially financially motivated. Literal interpretation of the standards would not deny this petitioner rights guaranteed to other similarly situated property owners. And a variance is not required to make use of the subject property. Approval would grant, it could convey special privilege upon this applicant. And so just to show you what's proposed, this would be the principal dwelling, which you can see here again at just over 400 square feet. And the ADU that is proposed at just over 200 square feet with the two parking spaces. With that, MPC staff does recommend approval of the first request for relief from the 125% standard and denial of the request to exceed the 40% floor area in relation to the principal. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Am I right, Edward, if they increase the size of the primary structure, they could get in compliance with the size of the ADU they want to build?
That is correct. They have some additional space here. But again, this has been about a year-long conversation. I anticipate that this was expected to be some sort of amenity space to be used in relation for all of these properties. It's just sort of, you know, understanding how our zoning ordinance treats principal dwellings, and it has maximums in essence. And so this was cut up in kind of an interesting way to accommodate what Mr. Vector was trying to do here, but I'm confident Ms. Paxton is going to speak in more detail about the intent.
And during this year-long conversation, did you suggest making the primary structure larger?
This particular iteration of the proposal is not what we had discussed. We discussed more so the subdivision that would come out of this. And so I can say that it's only when this application came in that I saw this specific configuration, but I would agree that it is possible to increase the size of the principal to make it conforming.
Okay. Any questions for staff? All right, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good morning. My name is Brianna Paxton. I'm here on behalf of the property owner, Lori DeVetter. Thank you. If you don't like cute things, you might want to shield your eyes because this plan definitely involves cute little structures that we're trying to bring Lori's vision to life here and see how we could make it fit within the parameters of the property and the parameters within the code so that you guys might be able to make a defensible decision. The lot pattern in this area of town varies, and the interesting thing about this part of 38th Street is that the street jogs. And so just to the west of this property, there are a number of single family houses that are right up between 3 and 5 feet close to the street. There's no sidewalks. It's a pretty tight, dense development pattern. And then as you're kind of turning the corner after her property, there's some more mid-century houses that are a little more horizontal and back a little further. And then further down, there is actually an existing cottage court that is non-conforming. So it's varied around this area, and I believe the site plan as drawn brings in kind of both of those elements of the existing single family houses that are very close to the street, as well as the cottage court feel of the development down the street. So as Edward shared, we are at 116% of the minimum, asking for relief from the 125%, and the principal building footprint is only 426 square feet, and our ADU will be 216 square feet. So again, these are tiny footprints that we're talking about. This is the existing lot facing north. The existing house, the beige colored house with the gable roof that you can see there, it's built around the 1920s. The existing garage, two-story garage that's on the northern parcel, I believe was built in the 1950s. Edward did reference a new construction next door to the east that was not this property owner. So I don't have a lot of details on that property, but they have a fence and a parking spot in the rear. But that both of those houses front Siler Avenue to the north. On the left is the property looking to the west. As you can see, some of those single family houses I mentioned that are right up with a close setback on the street. Obviously this curves, the street curves here, and basically I turned around and took a photo looking east towards some of those mid-century ranch houses that I mentioned that are further down the block. Basically after you pass this brick house in the far ground of this picture, you would turn to the right and see this, which is the existing cottage court configuration that is beloved in the neighborhood. Here's our site plan. There was a lot of math and mental gymnastics that went into coming up with this, so kudos to our architect team with Pete Callejas being able to follow all of the parameters that we have. Trying to make sure we have 10 feet of clearance between buildings here, trying to make sure we can utilize the existing parking space that is there and existing curb cut off of 38th Street. Both the main structure and the ADU are small and oriented in a way to respect the setback. The reason why the principal dwelling is the size that it is one is a concern for affordability. And these plans are both ones that are available from a somewhat local architect firm that she would be able to buy online. And it also respects a much beloved fig tree that is approximately located where that between the Cape May reversed and the main structure. Fig tree is right about here. So being able to keep that. We did not investigate making the principal dwelling unit larger, mostly out of respect for stormwater concerns. Right now we're about 30% lot coverage and are hoping not to add more impervious surface to this area. Just wanted to point out that you guys have routinely approved building ADU building size variances above 40%, and No, in this case, we're asking for 50% instead of 40, but it is a very small square footage that we're talking about here. And there is much demand for small properties like this, a studio apartment and a two-bedroom being the principal dwelling. There's not much on the market, new builds in a single-family neighborhood that you would be able to find on the market today. So we feel like this fills a big void of our affordable housing market. That's all.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the petitioner? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that would like to speak concerning this petition? None online either?
I do have one.
Oh, you do?
I got Andrew Booker.
Andrew who?
Booker.
Mr. Booker, are you online?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good afternoon or good morning. I appreciate the board's time this morning, and I appreciate the information presented by Ms. Paxton. Thank you for that presentation. I'm the neighbor to the east in the white home with the fence at 1319 Siler. I do think that the plan put forth here has been thoughtful towards the subdivided lot. I have my own opinion of the subdivision, but I think that the approach is motivated well. In terms of increasing the size of the principal structure, I think another reason to maybe consider not doing that is that there is a very old established fig tree in that courtyard that the neighbors and my wife take care of, which I would hate to see be destroyed, in addition to the utility and stormwater concerns that Ms. Paxton illustrated. My other concern for these two properties that are going to be built is that they are supposed to be single-family homes, and we had heard through the tenants of the other properties that Ms. DeVetter owns that this might be a quadplex, which I feel would increase density a bit more than the reduced 125% lot requirements are intending from a density standpoint. So I just wanted to vocalize that concern and see if there was any support for maybe the board to proceed with as they've recommended on the staff plan that was presented.
Thank you very much, sir. Any other people online? Would you like to rebut public comment?
Brianna Paxton, I just want to thank the neighbor for speaking up. Clearly the fig tree is a fan favorite around here, but did want to share that the plans proposed thus far is for a studio for the ADU, basically be a walk in, there'd be a living room downstairs and you'd walk up to your bedroom living space, sorry, sleeping space upstairs. And the principal dwelling would be two bedroom, kind of similar, two floor fuller living layout. And that is what we've decided, but believe that would be the most that could go on this property in a comfortable manner.
Thank you. We'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Ball, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I like the design. I think it is very creative in terms of it being a quadplex. Obviously, the zoning wouldn't permit that, so I'm sure that would end real quickly if they tried to go that direction. So. It seems in scale with the rest of the neighborhood, and I'd like to see it happen.
Mr. Turner?
No comment.
Mr. Plunk?
Yeah, it's a pretty unique configuration with the whole property and the neighboring and adjacent lots, and they found a pretty creative solution to kind of providing some affordable housing for this neighborhood. So I'm a fan of what they've worked out here.
Mr. Griffith? Would someone like to make a motion?
I motion to approve petitioner's request for both variances.
All right, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve both variances. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Ball. Any discussion? Mr. Griffith, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, motion passes and the request for variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear 1108 Abercorn Street, variances for ADU size, side yard, side setback.
Are we on 11?
We're on number 9 on the.
I've got number 9.
I think you've got the old list. They've reordered the list.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I've got to recuse myself. I have an interest in this property. So.
All right, Mr. Ball, thank you.
I'll step out now.
All right, for the record, Mr. Baugh is recusing himself. This is 25-001678.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just remind you all, please speak into your microphones. We have a device in the back of the room that makes it a little bit hard to hear sometimes. All right. This is Edward Morrow again, Director of Development Services. This is a petition at 1108 Abercorn Street, which is an existing non-conforming lot of record. I also feel the need to offer a little bit of preface here. Petitioner is requesting 4 variances in association with a proposal to develop a single-family residence that would have we'll call it an attached accessory dwelling unit. It is within the same structure. Basically, the ADU is proposed to be on the first floor of the dwelling, with the principal dwelling being situated above it, occupying the second floor, and there's a rooftop terrace that is proposed. And again, four variances in association with that. The first to exceed the maximum building lot coverage of 60%, to permit that ADU to exceed 40% and 700 square feet maximum in association with the principal, to reduce the southern side interior setback adjoining the lane, and finally, relief from the off-street parking requirement. And so there's been much conversation about this configuration, and so I'm going to jump down to some standards I referenced here. The reason it is not that multiple units are not permitted in this district, the TN1 district. This is being requested because, as we can see from these standards, if you're going to do a two-family over-under, there is a minimum requirement here that you have 1,050 square feet per unit and a width of 30 feet per unit. And so this is just short of those minimums. And so this accessory dwelling unit provision that is within the ordinance, it does not count against density, and it does offer relief from parking. So there's a reason for that ask. And so I guess inbuilt into this request is that determination as to whether or not the intent of the ordinance's standards have been met with regard to this being classified as an ADU. So a little bit of helpful context. This is Abercorn Street, and this is East Park Avenue here. And you can see the subject property adjoins East Park Lane. Here we are right here. It is also significant to note, as you'll see later, there is an egress stair that encroaches onto this property that is on this adjoining contributing historic structure just to the north. So that is also significant here.
These are two separate pieces of property. And
yeah, I have another photo of that so that you can understand how it's situated. There is a COA request that was heard yesterday by the Historic Preservation Commission, and they recommended approval. Just want to make sure that I didn't misunderstand that. The COA was recommended for approval yesterday by the HPC. According to the tax assessor, the subject property is about 1,620 square feet in area, with 32 feet of width and 50 feet of depth. The property is zoned TN1, and it is within the Thomas Square. It's Victorian or Thomas Square, I'm so sorry. Victorian, I apologize, Victorian district. The lot is currently vacant, but again, the petitioner is proposing to build a primary dwelling with an attached ADU within the same footprint. The lot is insufficient in size, in essence, to support that duplex, and so that's why the ADU is requested. I'd like to offer you some definitions to support your determination. An accessory dwelling unit is defined as a structure used as an individual residential unit located on the same lot as the principal dwelling, including a kitchen, bathroom, and sleeping area. A two-family dwelling is one building on a single lot containing two attached dwelling units with either a side-by-side or over-under arrangement, and this may include condominiums. So again, these are definitions just to support staff's recommendation ultimately and view on this. In discussing what determines whether or not something is an attached ADU, staff relied upon the ICC definition of a wall. When the unit is attached, it shall share a common wall with and have a separate entrance from the principal dwelling, or be connected by a covered walkway. When the unit shares a common wall with the principal building, the entrance to the unit shall be located along the side or rear facade of the building. An attached accessory dwelling unit shall meet the setback standards for the principal dwelling unit. A wall is a vertical element with a horizontal length to thickness ratio greater than 3 used to enclose a space. So again, these are the definitions that staff relied upon in its findings and to arrive at the conclusion that we came to.
Edward, that definition you just read, that's part of the International Code of Council. That is not necessarily written into our ordinance. Is that correct?
So the building codes that we use are referenced in actually from the Department of Community Affairs. It's the DCA that ultimately determines. And then we reference those locally to make them our standards as well.
Okay.
And I'll let John correct me on that connection, but we do refer to them by reference, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So the building code is referenced in the city's code of ordinances, but it has a separate section from the zoning ordinance. There's a building section that controls the issuing of building permits. There are individual references to portions of the building code in the zoning ordinance. I would have to check to see if there is a blanket reference to the International Building Code in the zoning ordinance.
Okay. I've got another question for John, but I'll wait till after your presentation.
Okay. All right. All right. So, in essence, again, this particular parcel does not meet the requirements to establish that duplex, and that's why we have why the petitioner has requested to be reviewed as an ADU. In looking at the other variances, this does exceed the lot coverage. Staff assessed that the anticipated footprint of the structure would be somewhere between 800 and 900 square feet to get something that would be conforming. That's what we anticipate. And so there is just a little bit in excess of that, coming to just over 63%. 63% or 60 is the maximum permitted. Also, in terms of the off-street parking requirement, this is an interesting nuance. Often we do have the discussion about ensuring that when petitioners come through, we want to make sure that if they've been given variances, that they're not going to face issues with permitting. And so in doing their due diligence beforehand and working with John, they determined that this was unlikely to receive approval from traffic engineering for a driveway permit. Simply because they have a slightly different standard with regard to width and depth requirements, which makes sense. We want to make sure that vehicles clear sidewalks and things of that nature. We want to make sure that when doors are opened, that they don't bump structures. And so their requirements for a drive are a little bit larger than the parking space standards that we find in the zoning ordinance. And so for that reason, simply because we believe it's the intent of this board that they not face issues with permitting once they apply, that relief from the off-street parking requirement was also prudent. But perhaps more compelling was the idea. The city of Savannah has some new modeling, flood modeling, that they're making use of. And so Tom McDonald, the city's floodplain administrator, did provide this, but it's available through the IMAP. We can see that this particular parcel is within this area that's identified as prone to flooding within the 100-year floodplain. And so on that basis, even if a driveway permit were to be approved, it might not be advisable to put that much impervious surface in an area that we are already well aware that it floods. So I figured I would offer that as the basis also for relief from that off-street parking standard. With that, you will see from the proposed site plan that the petitioner does intend to include parking. This will likely remain parking again simply because they're requesting a specific lot coverage. And so we would not expect to see the building increase if the parking requirement were relieved. We do anticipate that that would just be a non-conforming parking space, if that makes sense. But there would be parking on the site for the one dwelling that would go there. In looking at the rear setback requirement, the ordinance makes provision to reduce the rear setback to 5 feet because this particular parcel is oriented toward Abercorn, and so that is not an issue. And finally, we get to the safety egress stair for the adjoining historic property. That's just to the north. There are a number of ways that this could be resolved, and we did speak to the petitioner about the importance of resolving this matter. So this is the safety egress stair that was later added. You can see that at its greatest point, it encroaches onto the subject property by about 3.3 feet up here, 3.4 feet down here. And that was proffered as justification for the side setback relief adjoining the lane, shifting the structure in order to accommodate that. Again, staff took the position that this was something that could likely be remedied otherwise. So to look at the criteria, the requested variances are not necessarily consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. There are a couple of amendments to the configuration that could be made to produce something that is more or less conforming in all regards. Whether or not the product of those configurations would actually yield something that would be better for the site is debatable. No special circumstances are present regarding the subject property or contained structures other than this is a non-conforming lot of record, which again, there is a building envelope that I would estimate to be between 800 and 900 square feet. though staff does support the minor increase of lot coverage overall. The requests, several of them are the result of the petitioner's chosen design, and they may be financially motivated. Literal interpretation would not deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed. Again, we think a significant factor was the ordinance's relief to that rear setback, reducing it to 5 feet. And approval of the variances would confer special privilege upon the petitioner, though variance relief is a remedy afforded to all similarly situated property owners. And so with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of the two requests. The first to exceed maximum building lot coverage of 60% and relief from the off-street parking requirement. And staff recommends denial of the other two variances to exceed the 40% building footprint maximum for an ADU in relation to the principal and for the side setback relief adjoining the lane. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, if you could go back to that definition about the how an ADU is separated from a principal dwelling. So, John, you determined that this could be an ADU, even though it's the definition says it's to be separated by wall, when indeed in this case it's going to be separated by a ceiling.
Yeah, and there's a stairwell in this structure, and so that does, I mean, there's a wall to that stairwell, and so that's between those two units. I mean, I guess in my perspective, this is really defying the definition of attached ADU in general. I mean, this is not the intent of the attached ADU part of the ordinance. I think the applicant has kind of threaded a technical needle here to try to make this fit into that concept. I don't think it actually is what that idea is thinking about when it says you can have an attached ADU. And for that reason, it needs variances to be allowed. I think, yes, it does meet that definition, but it has other issues where does this in spirit seem like an attached ADU? Not in the way that the code intends.
Any other questions for staff? All right. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. So far I've only got, one, speaker card, Ellie Isaacs from his. Oh my gosh. Thanks so much. Come forward. I'm just about to skip all over you.
Hello, Brianna Paxton. It's me again. I am here representing an LLC that owns this property, 1201 Abercorn LLC. You might recognize that address. It's the church at the corner of Duffy and Abercorn. It's a group of local owners that bought that. They all live within walking distance of this location, which is why they had purchased that church. It's since undergone an exterior renovation and is awaiting the right tenant to finish the interior build out. This lot and one other one came with that transaction. So as we were working on the main church, we have been thinking over the past few months what to do with these other lots, what could be built here that these owners would want to see, that the neighbors would want to see, what would be a good use of this property. So I wanted to orient you to this corner between East, what is now known as East Park Lane and Abercorn. As you can see in the Sanborn map on the far right, at one point in time, all four corners of this intersection had buildings on the zero lot line that faced Abercorn. And so it used to be much more dense than it is now. There's only one building of these four on the Sanborn that's existing today, and that's 1109. Abercorn Street, which is a duplex across the street. This is the lot. Picture on the left is from Abercorn facing east, and then a little bit at an angle. As you can see, the tenants of the apartment building to the north currently utilize this lot, which is probably why those stairs were mistakenly built 4 feet over the property line. It's just a little lot, so nobody noticed. I also want to point out, in addition to the stair encroachment, the lot of record itself is crooked.
And so one of the reasons that we are dipping into that 3-foot setback is because the architect, Kevin Rose, was trying to orient the building along Abercorn Street and align it with the contributing building to the north. And that means it's slightly, you know, off kilter because the lot is off kilter. There is also a wooden fence from the other property to the east of us that is also on the property. We happened upon the flood issue because we were working on the 1201 Abercorn Church this summer. Happened, you know, one of those big summer storms that, you know, came in the late afternoon. This van was actually one of our subcontractor's friends. And so he'd pulled it up and was like, look at this, you know, my buddy got his van flooded. And we're like, oh, that's right in front of our lot. So we happened upon this and had some extensive discussion with Todd McDonald because we didn't know if this lot was even buildable because of that special flood designation. But in discussing things with Tom, he said that if we built 4 feet above grade, that would be high enough to meet their base flood elevations, and that if we did a crawl space foundation so that water could move under the building and be absorbed, then those two situations would, you know, he would be able to consider a permit on this. So we've kind of started at the wide end of the funnel and have been like ping-ponging our way down in this design process to try to figure out like what could fit on this lot. So after the flood zone, we went to zoning. As Edward mentioned, this lot is substandard. It's only 1,620 square feet. The base flood elevation basically meant that that commercial use was out, even though you can do mixed use development in TN district. Trying to fit an ADA ramp on this small of a property and meet historic guidelines and the 4 feet up, we didn't think was obtainable. So single family use is really the only use given those parameters that could be on the property. And with that, one parking space is required, of course. Next, we went to HPC, and in an interesting turn of events in looking through the HPC guidelines, we separated the concepts of building type versus building use. And if you build under the commercial building type in the HPC guidelines, you are afforded different parameters than if you're building a residential style building. And so with following the commercial building type, we are able to build on the zero lot line of Abercorn, which again matches what was there historically. And it also gave us, I think, a cleaner look to the property. So we, as Edward shared, did receive approval yesterday for the appearance, look, and exterior material choices of the building yesterday at HPC. But that is why it looks commercial, but will be residential in use. Some of our design influence looking around the district included other zero lot line buildings, commercial buildings facing Abercorn with a recessed entrance and a flat roof. Other existing structures throughout the district or very nearby that have maybe was residential use at one time and a different use on the ground level. This picture on the far right is on the 300 block of East Hall Street, and right by the tree and azalea bush right here is actually a door for their ADU that is on the ground floor. So there are existing structures throughout the district. You know, if you think of Jones Street, is tons of townhouses with a ground floor garden apartment. Are those labeled an ADU or a duplex? I don't know the answer to that, but these are some of the design influences that we are looking at to say, would this fit in the neighborhood physically, contextually, historically? We think this fits into the neighborhood. Which leads us to, how does this fit into the zoning code question? As Edward highlighted, we are at 63% lot coverage, just over the 60%. We have the off-kilter lot, which dips us into the southern 3-foot setback. The ADU, I think, is the real crux of the issue and question in front of you today, and I'll go over that in a second. And I also have some diagrams talking about the off-street parking. So why do we think this is an ADU? One, it is subordinate in size to the principal dwelling unit. So the ADU itself will only be about 800 square feet, and the 1.5 stories above it, that will be the principal dwelling unit, is over 1,300 square feet plus an outdoor terrace. So I felt that we felt that relationship of it is a smaller unit with less amenities that meets the intent of the ordinance. We are able to have a rear and side entrance that meets the intent of the ordinance. Again, these are commonly found throughout the district. And I think the real crux of the issue, besides what is a ceiling versus what is a wall, is also, I didn't grab this, but later on down in the building code, it would talk about what is a dwelling unit and what is a kitchen. And from my understanding, talking with the architect, it really boils down to, does this bottom unit get full kitchen facilities, including a stove, or not? Regarding the request for a parking waiver, if we were to try to meet the traffic engineering manual, which I believe was adopted in 2009, we would basically be devoting a third of the lot to the parking space, because that requires it be 12-foot wide parking spot and 5 feet from the property line. Could we shorten the building by 8 feet and meet that? Sure. But is that a good use of space? In our opinion, no. That prioritizes cars over housing. And so our current configuration, where approximately a fifth of the lot would be potentially devoted to parking and the rest of it devoted to housing, we felt was more appropriate to meet community needs at this point in time. So now I've kept you in suspense. Here are the plans for the building. As you can see, it reads as a commercial structure, but will have a residential use. It is elevated and will have a, it is 40 feet tall, and that includes the 4 foot base flood elevation of the crawl space foundation there. The, again, the building directly across the street has a zero lot line on both Abercorn and the lane, and I believe takes up 90% of the lot, just for perspective. This structure right here is the Cuban Window Cafe that you're probably familiar with. That's the next probably closest landmark, just to orient you. This is a close in on the site plan. We are at 2 feet 9 inches on the front side of the lot. And because of a lot of things that I've already mentioned, we dip in, and this part of the building is 1 feet 6 inches from the lot line. I will point out that this is a full 20-foot wide lane. So obviously the 3-foot setback is so the trash truck can get through, the fire truck can get through, all of those tenants who park in the rear, you know, further down this lane can all get there. So we felt we had really tried our best to address that, and we don't want the building to get hit by the trash truck either. In terms of the interior program of the lot, on the left here, we have the downstairs unit, which, you know, if proposed as an ADU, would be able to have a full kitchen facility. And then the stair going up, continuing up to the principal unit. They have a large living room, kitchen, a bedroom. And then the third level includes an additional bedroom, which could be used as a rec room or something else, depending on how the tenant wants to do that. And then the outdoor terrace that they would have their own private outdoor space. Unfortunately, for the ADU / ground floor resident, there's not any planned outdoor space, just given the constraints. So I wanted to go back to the site plan and leave it here, but I think the crux of the issue is, does the tenant on the first floor deserve a full kitchen? That's really the question at hand. You know, can this thread the needle enough for you guys to make a defensible decision? I tried to provide a lot of evidence of where our thought process was, and would be happy to answer any questions.
I got a question. the stairs did encroach on this property. Did you take those into account when you're calculating the lot coverage? Because they are part of the lot coverage, whether they belong to you or not.
We did not. That is a great question.
And what do you plan to do about them?
Those are not, I would be considered under a roof. So I would question whether that is considered under the lot coverage or not. Well, maybe someone can help answer that.
And it ought to be answered. Does anybody else have any questions? Or do you have an answer for that, John?
Building coverage is defined as structures that have a roof, yes.
Okay, so this is, as far as lot coverage calculations, these don't exist.
That's correct, yeah. A stair, a stoop that doesn't have a roof would typically is not part of building coverage calculation, that's right.
Do you have any plans to do something about this, or are we just going to...
We have, so that property was rehabbed several years ago and is held as affordable housing, and that is the second egress for those tenants. So I think we're between, you know, dipping into 3 foot in the lane or potentially making that building more unsafe if they don't have a second manner of egress. We have been in communication with those owners, but haven't really been able to find a resolve. Obviously, that would cost them a tremendous amount of money to try to remedy that situation, not even thinking ahead to, you know, these are steel staircases and the tariffs coming, you know, when could they actually get that done? So we felt like we would try our hand here with you guys and understanding, hopefully you can understand the difficult position that we're in, trying to make sure that those residents are safe and that we're trying our best to meet the standards here with the lot setback.
Do you have any questions for petitioner? Any of you? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mrs. Isaacs, would you like to come forward?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. We spoke yesterday at HPC in support of this project, and we are here to speak in support of it now as well. Immense support as it's submitted today. We appreciate the concept of recognizing the pre-existing mixture of building typologies and uses that have evolved in the surrounding area and allowing it to influence the modern design of this building. As a ground floor ADU, which Ms. Paxton just reinforced, is seen throughout multiple historic districts in Savannah, allows the petition as presented to take an otherwise non-conforming and unbuildable lot within a flood zone to be sensitively infilled with much needed housing, which I think we can all argue is the highest and best use of this lot. The design is very thoughtful and takes into consideration all of the different factors that Ms. Paxton went into at length, so I will reiterate them now. But I think their goal is to keep the fire stair for the people that are adjacent property to them, and then also just take full advantage of the lot and not have it just be an unconforming vacant lot. So
that's all I have.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak? Anybody online?
No, sir.
Did we get any letters about this or any from name?
May I ask a question?
If you're a member of the public, if you'd like to speak, you may come forward and address the chair. State your name for the record, please.
Jane Gray Jones. I live at 209 East Park, a house away from this. And my question is about the trash.
Address the chair.
Where is the trash going? Because we just did a big renovation down there. We understand the flooding. The trash has been a huge issue over the course of the last couple of years.
On a different version of the plan, it's actually marked as...
When we first got there, everybody just had it, their trash cans lined up against the gas station. And then we were able, over the course of time, to kind of move everybody's cans to their specific areas. But the trash is a huge problem, just, you know, getting floating in the lane with the flooding going on. And I hope you really understand how much that place floods. We are two houses down, and we have flooded our pool house twice. And the trash is just floating everywhere. So it's really about containing. And I know with the new build, we were asked to like have a place for us to tuck away our cans. So it's just about, there's such a volume of trash cans down there. So it's really my question. And I'm in support of the deal. If they can also help us grade that, that area so that we can deal with some of the flooding coming down the lane. The flooding is unbelievable. So really my big question is really about where the trash is going to be contained. Who's going to bring it out? Is there now a super that does that? Because that's not what's happening.
That Mr. Morris pulled up, it shows the refuse area.
Yeah.
So they do have a place.
Yeah, so what happens to the affordable housing trash cans?
I do not know.
Yeah, exactly. Where are they going to go? There's not a super that brings them out. Right now, they all live on the back lot. You know, the guys all park in that lot, and the edge of that lane, of the lane, is covered in the trash cans. So it's really about the responsibility of the other housing. Where are those cans going to go? There's a lot of cans, over 10 cans, before we build this. So, I mean, we're talking to code compliance all the time about this, but it is a consideration about it's going to flood. And if we can get some help grading that lane when you do this build, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Any other members of the public want to speak? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Brianna Paxton, yes. I just want to point out that per the historic district guidelines, the refuse cans have to be, you know, behind a screen and are meant to go off this back deck so someone could, you know, have a little spot to open and throw it in. But I appreciate gentlemen's bringing to our attention how the 201 Park would, where their refuge cans would go and how they would need access to the lane where the trash truck comes. Because I imagine the trash truck does not go up Abercorn, only goes in the lane. So definitely something to put in front of our architect to figure out.
And I've got another question for you. The examples you gave of the other structures in the city that are over and under, are those specifically designated as ADUs by definition, or are those over and under like a duplex?
I don't know the answer to that. One address I have, if someone can look it up, is 308 Hall Street. Is this one? I'm not positive of the address of this property, but it is close to Forsyth. I was walking around taking pictures.
I've been in both of those.
Okay. This one, I believe, might have an office use, but clearly was residential at one point in time.
So then would that be defined as an ADU? Or because the presentation made it sound like this is going on all over the place, let's do it over here, as opposed to this is something brand new. And that, I think, makes it a pretty good question. But what are they? Because that's a big part of what we're going to define here today. Go ahead, John. What do you have?
I think for the most part, structures, if they have a similar layout to what's proposed here and, you know, are decades or more old, if they do not have the lot area to meet the zoning requirements for a duplex, would be considered to be non-conforming duplexes. I'd have to double check, but I don't think there was a concept of an attached ADU in the old zoning ordinance prior to 2019. And so I don't know that we would attempt to retroactively define something unless that was needed to establish current conformity for some reason. But a lot of these structures look like they would have been built before zoning existed at all, in which case lot area would not even have been relevant.
That was going to be my point. I'd like to hear from Ms. Wilson as
well. Me too. But I want to add that the reason for defining it, or the whole concept of defining it, has been brought up by the proposal. Go ahead, Ms. Wilson.
As you say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Anyway. Thank you.
Melanie Wilson, Executive Director and CEO of the Metropolitan Planning Commission. The question that you asked with regards to this issue of the over-under, when we did our updates, we addressed that, and they are over-under. Everything that has come in that has been within the district are not classified as ADUs. They're classified as over and under, and there's a specific definition for that. There's specific lot guidelines and requirements for over under units, but what you're seeing for conversions as well as new builds are over unders. Some of the older stuff that was built pre-zoning, they're just grandfathered in. You know, some of them happen to have higher fill-ins because, you know, topography and other things of that nature. But anything new is an over under and not considered as an ADU. And I had a number of conversations with several architects asking this question because I was curious as well. And they all, and probably the most prominent one who does a lot of over-unders, Mr. Cedric Coleman, indicated that it's over-under. So that's the challenge. I think one of the things that the city and everybody's been trying to address is what can you do to create more opportunities for ADUs to go on properties? But in this case, it's different. This is basically a basement. It could be considered a basement apartment. In some cases, in other communities, they would be considered like a granny flat or something that a relative would live in. But it still would not be considered as a separate ADUs. ADUs generally are separate units.
Thank you.
Are we in board discussion? Is that what we're in?
Well, I think we're still kind of gathering some testimony, not necessarily public comment, but if you have any questions to ask, it'd be a good time to do it. Anybody, if you have any questions for any staff? Well, I guess we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Griffith, what do you have to say?
They're very generous to allow that.
That was the exact point I was going to make, is that it kind of goes back to the case we saw a couple ago where you had two property owners kind of fighting, and this is the opposite of that, is where they're making every effort to not put the property next door to them in a very difficult situation, and they've worked out their whole plan based on not screwing over something that was not their fault. It was the neighbors, you know, should have known where the property line was, but they don't want, you know, they're trying to be good neighbors here, and I do appreciate that, especially having just saw that case, a couple cases.
Certainly
so.
Code enforcement's gonna go out to them now, right?
Well, you'd like to think. I've got an adult daughter who's been wanting to move out for some time into affordable housing. I very much understand the need for that, but it seems to also becoming a thing to throw in every time you want to get something that is a little questionable. I see it used a lot, and doing that's going to take away from the importance of the issue. And it seems like also in this case here, what we're really defining is the difference between an ADU and an over and under. That's what this comes down to. Mr. Turner, do you have anything you'd like to add?
It just feels like too many steps, too many questions still up in the air for me to feel comfortable with it.
I guess so the issue with the over and under, if they went that route, it would still be non-conform.
They would have to have a variance.
It's too small.
They'd have to have a variance to build the over and under, but they'd also be required to have parking, whereas with the ADU, it eliminates the parking requirement.
Right.
Mr. Marvin, can you scroll up to the recommendations?
But less. Parking's the same no matter what.
No.
An accessory dwelling unit within the zoning ordinance does not require off-street parking.
Okay.
The reason.
The parking requirement is the same. Yes. And that was one of the requests. Again, not requested because they won't be able to provide one. I fully expect that parking space that's nine and a half by
you know, it's a standard zoning ordinance parking space. Again, that was requested simply because we expect them to have permitting issues getting through traffic engineering for the driveway. So they have a different requirement. And not only that, they require that you have concrete to a certain PSI standard and things of that nature. So that was why the request for the relief from the parking requirement, not for the ADU.
Can you scroll up to the recommendations?
Sorry, scroll down.
Any other board discussion? Anything y'all might like to add?
Excuse me. Oh, can you please turn on the microphone?
Sorry.
Thank you.
Was about the rear yard setback, but it's not truly 3 feet. Like the lady told us, it's, you know, 2.9 inches on the western side and 1.3 on the eastern. So
because of how it's.
Yeah, right.
Cattywampus.
And y'all may not agree with me. The designation between the ADU and the other, I'm fine with it.
Would someone care to make a motion?
Yeah, I mean, I'll make a motion to accept the petitioner's request.
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Griffith has made a motion to accept the petitioner's request. It is seconded by Mr. Plunk. Is there any discussion on the motion? All right, Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes and the requests are approved. Right here, 412 East Anderson, variance for rear yard setback 25-001719.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Edward Morrow. This is a request at 2142 East 42nd Street. I'm sorry, I don't know how that address got there. This is actually at 412 East Anderson Street. Essentially, this is an existing non-conforming historic structure, and it also has a contributing is what I was looking for. This is an existing contributing historic structure and has a non-contributing addition that has been appended to it. And the petitioner essentially would like to add an elevator to bring the structure into greater ADA compliance. There is a non-conforming addition that already, I would say the eaves and overhangs actually encroach into the public lane. And so this particular addition is actually well in advance of that. So there's a greater encroachment that already exists and has existed since about the 80s. And this elevator will sit even within that. So it doesn't expand the encroachment at all, but it is still non-conforming. Essentially, once that is put into place, the petitioner would have a rear setback that would be about 12 feet, where 30 feet are ordinarily anticipated. So I'm just going to jump to the site plan, just to offer. This is, a SCAD Foundations building. This is the actual historic contributing structure. This is the non-contributing structure that was added, in the 80s after it was acquired, begun to be used by SCAD. The proposed addition is actually within this blue square right here. It's just this little gray area right here, and so you can see the existing encroachment. Actually, I'm going to imagine these eaves and overhangs are actually in this lane, and so we are well within what is already an encroaching and non-conforming structure. On the site plan, it indicates that the requested rear setback is 12 feet 1.5 inches, where 30 feet are ordinarily required. In the event that something, goes not according to plan, staff has recommended 12 feet is a nice round number, giving them just a little bit of wiggle room, if you would. And looking at this proposed addition is consistent with the intent of the ordinance and its associated policies because it promotes greater compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. The structure proposed for modification is a contributing historic structure, having been constructed in or about 1896 and prior to the adoption of the current development standards. And these modifications are at least likely to adversely impact the historic structure as proposed. The special condition is not the result of the petitioner's actions, and the requested variance is not financially motivated. Literal interpretation should be likely would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed. However, the proposed addition is likely in the interest of the better interest of the general public to make the historic structure more accessible and compliant with ADA. The variance is not required to make use of the subject property. With that, MPC staff does recommend approval of this request to reduce the rear yard setback to approximately 12 feet. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Mr. Morrow? Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Hey, I'm Scott Cook with Cook Architecture. You're representing SCAD. Really appreciate staff's time on this project and investigating it. Was just described, we're basically building an elevator on the back of an existing school building to provide accessibility. The 1980s addition that was done by the school board, right here in the red box, was built all the way up to the property line. What we're doing now is we're adding an elevator, which is located right there. And then this is a really small little lobby that's going to allow the students to come in from the backside and faculty from the backside where the parking lot's located. So all we're really doing is trying to provide accessibility to the building. You know, obviously the rear yard setback wasn't met from the 1980s addition, but we're adding about 250 square feet onto that existing, encroachment into the rear yard setback. Really appreciate y'all's time, and let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you. Is there any questions for the petitioner? All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
I'm going to enter into public comment. Mr. Yellen, would you like to speak? Mrs. Isaac.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Again, I just wanted to be on record that we spoke in support yesterday of this petition at HPC and that we are in support of it now.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wish to speak? Are there any online?
No, sir.
Okay. But we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Griffith, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No.
Mr. Blount?
No, sir.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Ball?
No.
Okay. Would someone care to make a motion?
I motion to approve the requested variance.
I'll second Mr. Turner.
Mr. Turner has made a motion to approve the requested variance. It's seconded by Mr. Plunk. Is there any discussion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and the variance is approved. Lastly, we're going to hear 322 East 64th Street. Variance for eave overhang and side yard setback 25-001721.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Edward Morrow. The petitioner is requesting two variances in association with home additions at 322 East 64th Street. The subject property is in the RSF6 zoning district, which requires 5 feet size setbacks. Also, the eaves and overhangs are required to be, I believe, within 3 feet of the property line. Those were not requested. However, in evaluating this petition, we determined that there would likely need to be relief for those as well. And so the petitioner is requesting to reduce the western or interior side setback from 5 feet to 1 feet. They would like to enclose this particular portion of the home right here. Obviously, you can see that it exists under the roof line, but they would like to make this a room. And then there's also part of the proposal to make additions in kind of the northern and southern areas here on the subject property. So according to the tax assessor, the subject property is about 16,050 square feet. Again, it's zoned RSF6. It is a conforming parcel in this district. It's 107 feet wide and 150 feet deep. The dwelling was constructed in 1952. It's non-conforming under current standards because it presently rests 1 foot. That portion from the property line where 5 feet is currently required. And so the petitioner is requesting to increase the portion of the structure that would be non-conforming with this request. The existing structure is on the rear of the property. The tax assessor does not have any information about this portion of the property. And so we were unable to determine some of the specifics, but I'm confident the petitioner must be here to provide those details. Yes, okay, awesome. Again, these are the standards showing that the zoning ordinance currently requires a 5-foot side setback for interiors. Eaves and overhangs may be, they may encroach into the side setback, but must be at least 3 feet from the property line. I'm going to jump down to the proposal itself so that you can see. So this is the portion that currently adjoins that property line with the 1 foot separation. I'm going to close this off and you can see turn this into an office. And they would have additions here that would create a porch. And then also they would create a garage here. And so I'm not sure if you noticed from the aerial image, presently you would come in kind of from this direction. And so this proposal also requires coordination with traffic engineering as they would like to add a new driveway, a new means of ingress and egress here to come into their property, which is adjoining a lane. I'm going to put this right back here just for your reference. So you can see that currently they enter the property right here on East 64th Street. They would have a request for traffic engineering to give them a new driveway permit to realign this and permit that entry coming in about here. And they do have the use of the lane here for their property. So with that context, I'm going to jump down and look at our criteria. The proposal is not consistent with the intent of the ordinance. However, the carport was built prior to the adoption of the current development standards and may have been conforming at the time of its construction. There are no special circumstances here other than structures that were built prior to adoption of current standards. The request is the result of the petitioner's chosen design. The requested variance is unlikely to be financially motivated. Literal interpretation would not deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by similarly situated property owners, and the variance is not required to make use of the subject property. Approval of this variance would confer special privilege upon this applicant. With that, MPC staff does recommend denial of these two variances. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
So, Edward, it's their proposal is not to get any closer to the property line than already, but they're going to expand it the other way, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Thank you. Would petitioner please come forward?
I'm Matthew Hallett. I'm the designer of the project.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, gentlemen. So it's a funny project. As we said, it's a 1950s ranch. There was once a one-car carport, which was enclosed in 1993, and this current carport added 1993, and that's what took it the property to that, almost to the property line. And the eaves are on the property line right now. Obviously, 1993 is the current era. There was zoning. They must have gotten some sort of approval because there was a permit for the current enlarged carport. Unfortunately, it's not of the era. We can just go look in the computer and find that, you know, whatever the approvals they got. So that current carport is non-conforming. I was originally hired to just close in that carport. The footprint of that carport at 17 by 17 is not large enough to fit a modern car. So simply closing in that carport, making it a garage wouldn't have worked and still would have required this process, which is why I'm proposing this plan, which brings a kind of a modern size two-car garage to the front. It also preserves the look of the rest of the structure. It is, I feel 1950s structures are quite endearing. I live right around the corner in a similar building. And, this addition, you know, keeps the lines of the historic house what they are. And then, has this kind of sweeping 1950s driveway across the front, which also maintains all the trees on the property. We won't lose any of the tree coverage on the front, which I also feel is important. That's it. Basically, you know, won't have any change to the, you know, for the neighbors, for the neighborhood, because we're just building on the current line where the structure is currently.
Thank you. Any questions for a petitioner? No. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that wish to speak? All right. Well, we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Ball, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Not at this time.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
No.
Mr. Griffin?
No.
Anyone want to make a motion?
I move to grant petitioner's request.
All right, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to grant the petitioner's request. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Ball. No discussion on the motion. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
And Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and variances are granted. And that will conclude our meeting. We're adjourned.